One problem complicating the effort in Kandahar and across Afghanistan is the deteriorating relationship between the U.S. and Afghan President Hamid Karzai. Last week, he said Western forces were dangerously close to being perceived as invaders. He's also accused U.S. officials of fraud in August presidential elections, denying him an outright victory. And on Saturday, in a closed-door meeting with members of parliament, Karzai threatened to join the Taliban if the international community continues to pressure him on reform. Today, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs called Karzai's words genuinely troubling. Well, for more, we're joined by Elizabeth Rubin. She wrote an extensive profile of President Karzai for the New York Times magazine last August. And Ms. Rubin, Karzai seems to be in a very difficult position. He can't afford to seem too cozy with the West, some might say, or he'll lose credibility at home. How much of this tough talk is basically posturing, and how much is real anger toward the West?
I would say that whenever Karzai starts to come under pressure, he lashes out in anger, and we've seen this before. In January of 2009, right when President Obama was elected, and Karzai was beginning to worry that he was going to lose the friendship and the support of Bush, he had the same kind of meeting with his cabinet in which he told them all that this was sort of a moment of truth, and they could either stand with him or stand up and leave. And he was threatening to go into the mountains to fight with the Taliban. And he does this periodically. Right now, he's under an extreme pressure, not because of, a fear that he's going to be too close to the West amongst the populace, because, in fact, he's deeply unpopular for corruption in the government and for the behavior of his brothers, not because of his relationship with the West. Many Afghans want the West to stay in Afghanistan. So I think what's happening is we're seeing him, you know, crumbling under pressure. And so he starts to lash out in any direction. That's how I would characterize what's going on now.
You have spent a good deal of time with Hamid Karzai. Give us a sketch of the man. What is the key to his personality and his leadership style?
Karzai is a deeply passionate, theatrical kind of person, not in a bad way, but in a, you know, he loves to be holding court, holding forth. He loves to tell stories. He likes intimate settings. He likes to lead in a sort of kingly fashion as head of the tribe. He is also slightly paranoid. He has deep convictions of a conspiracy going on. Sometimes it's led by the British, that the British are in cahoots with the Pakistanis and now the Americans to turn over parts of the country to Pakistan and the Taliban. And, you know, he's... I think that the pressure that he's been under from both the population at home and from the competing interests of different countries has really has been too much for him.
What options does the White House have to bring Karzai back in line? Diplomacy doesn't seem to be moving them forward toward that end, and it seems like in some ways they're stuck with him. What do they do?
It's a very good question. I don't know how you bring... I don't think you can bring Karzai back in line. I don't think he's a flesh and blood human being. I mean, the only thing that really can be done is to actually start bringing troops home and just say, okay, you deal with the problem.
It seems like he needs the U.S. to stay on board. And if the U.S. were to leave, that he'd have real political problems and also real problems in governance. Is there, in some ways, a perverse incentive for Karzai to foot drag on bringing stability to the country and getting corruption under control in order to demonstrate an ongoing need for the U.S. to stay?
Yes, I suppose there would be, but I don't know that he's that strategic-minded, you know. I think he foot drags for other reasons. He foot drags to distract from the real problems that are going on. You know, he doesn't have a problem with opium production or corruption. I don't think he sees them in the same way that we do. So, you know, I think that there are just very different ways of seeing what's right and wrong, and we don't have the same vision that he does.
Elizabeth Rubin is a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. Elizabeth, thanks so much.
Thank you.